And good evening, everybody. How's it going? This is Tyler Dunn for another Packers podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And I am joined here with a new pinch hitter, temporary fill-in.
Sure.
NBC 26's Dan Coop here in Green Bay.
Packers podcast rookie. Well, thanks for having me on, Tyler.
Rookie, you're the pro here. You know about speaking into cameras and microphones and all that good stuff.
I am going to go on record and say I am still protesting our entry song. I don't know what's wrong with Something Happened on the Way to Heaven by Phil Collins, but apparently half the equation, not a big fan.
I think that something's a little wrong about you liking Phil Collins.
I think something's wrong that if you don't like Phil Collins, I've seen him three times in concert. Each time he's blown me away.
What was the average demographic there for Phil Collins?
I was on the younger side, I'll be honest. But at the time, my freshman year of college, my 15-year-old younger brother was probably the youngest person there.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Turn It On Again, reunion tour, Wells Fargo Center, back then the Wachovia Center in Philadelphia. Unbelievable show.
He just seems a little too involved.
With what?
With the lyrics, with the moment. It's just every song seems a little too life and death.
What
Phil
does that
Collins.
Mean? A little too involved? Would you rather be not involved like all of your rap stars today?
I like Justin Vernon Bon Iver. Just acts like he kind of doesn't want to be there.
I kind of like that. Who?
Never mind.
Well, I don't know who that is.
Anyways, Dan is filling in for obviously Bob McGinn, the heart and soul of this podcast. He is hunkered down, bunkered down. Right in the midst of all his NFL draft coverage, his series up and running at JS Online. You can check it out there. But people want the podcast, the show to go on. So So here we are, Dan.
I'm like Elion Herrera pinch hitting for Ryan Braun here. I'm just going to try to be serviceable out and right.
There you go. That's all you can ask for.
Right.
That's all you can ask for. Maybe a little Graham Harrell, B.J. Coleman, or
League. I don't want to be out of the league here. But I'm going to try to do enough to stay relevant.
Okay. Well, basically, guys, we're just gonna we're gonna take some of your questions on Twitter. We put it out there. We'll hit on that later, but we're gonna go through the Packers' top draft needs and really just kind of hit on a few questions, a few issues that everybody is really discussing on Twitter, at the local pubs, everywhere.
Sure.
Questions that
at the fish
may
fry.
Or may not be in Ted Thompson's draft room. So
it's Friday. You're at the fish fry. You're wondering what they're gonna do on Thursday.
Exactly. But first off, Dan, let's just go through the Packers roster as it stands and, three or four positions needs that they absolutely need to address. Because, look, the Packers aren't like other teams. They're not going to go out there in free agency and fill needs that way. It's just not what they do. Obviously, they did sign Julius Peppers this offseason. We can talk about that a little bit. Ted Thompson said yesterday that he sees no signs of decline in Julius Peppers' play at 34 years old. But there's still a handful of positions that they need to get to. Number one, what stands out to you?
Well, how about Ted yesterday opening up the vault a little bit, telling us that there are no Packer draft insiders except for him. So anybody reporting inside information has to have gotten it from Ted, and he said he's not talking. I thought that was pretty funny. Biggest area in need, obviously, it's really been hammered to this point. Safety is the biggest area in need. You saw Morgan Burnett, zero interceptions last season, almost unheard of at an impact position. And the guys opposite him, one of them's gone. Envy Jennings is on the Bears now. Sean Richardson can't stay healthy. He's finally got cleared from surgery on his neck. He played special teams. Then you got Chris Banjo. He started, I believe, one game last year. Played okay, but he may not be the big answer. This is, but I've been talking about this on the various communication airways all offseason. I think center is a big need for this team. That's probably because I work with Larry McCarron, and because in my limited time playing football myself, I too was a center. I think that's a huge area that's really not being talked about this football team. Aaron Rodgers is about to have his fourth different center in 4 years. They need some stability, continuity along the offensive line. As we move on, do you want me to keep going, or do you want to chime in here? You look like you're chomping at the bit.
No, Dan Coop on fire. Let it rip.
You know what? That's generally how I'm described. We have outside linebacker, inside backer, I think, are areas, only because the position outside or opposite of Clay Matthews has been such they need production, and they haven't gotten it. How Julius Peppers fits in, you and Bob talked about it in your last podcast. No one really knows because no one knows really the direction of the defense. Tight end's another one because I don't think Jermichael Finley's going to be back, personal opinion. Wide receiver, you could say, depending on how Boykin looks, Jared Boykin in training camp. And then up front, defensive tackle, Ryan Pickett still not on the roster. Johnny Jolly still not on the roster. B.J. Raji coming off a pretty horrendous season. I think they could use some depth up front there as well.
Boy, for a team that won the division, that's a lot of needs there.
Well, you know, you win the division at, what, 8-7-1. That's a division winning team. I think you've got a lot of holes to fill. And, of course, staying healthy is big, too. But they haven't, the Packers haven't shown that they've been able to do that.
Right, they haven't. I mean, they're scratching their heads. Ted Thompson talked more about that yesterday. And that was kind of another thing that came out of there. He said there could be some tweaks and changes to training camp to lighten the load there again. But I guess when I look at this roster and you look at what stands in Green Bay's way of the Super Bowl, it's Seattle, it's San Francisco. Yeah. So you put those rosters up side by side. Look, Seattle safeties, Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor, obviously two of the best in the game. Big difference there from Morgan Burnett and whoever is there with Morgan Burnett. You look at inside linebacker San Francisco, Navarro Bowman, obviously coming off his injury, and Patrick Willis, a little different than A.J. Hawk and Brad Jones. Big discrepancy there. So I think if you're Green Bay, you have to add talent there. You have to add butt kickers there. They need violent, aggressive playmakers around the ball. I mean, there were stretches last year in that locker room. You were in there too, Dan, where we're talking to these players about forcing turnovers, about being around the ball, and just a lot of empty answers. Guys not knowing, safeties not knowing why they weren't around. It wasn't like they were dropping a ton of interceptions last year.
They weren't even there.
They weren't there. They weren't in position. And you know, Chris Banjo is one of the more honest guys in there. He said, yeah, we're in there watching film and literally scratching our heads, not knowing why that is. I think a big reason is personnel. You just have to have a player who's instinctual, who has great reaction time, who is in the right place at the right time. We'll get into our projections and our first-round picks later, but obvious major position need there.
And you mentioned the Seattles and the San Franciscos of the world. It's so important to have those guys on the back end. When you look at the way the Packers have constructed their defense, who among them, maybe with the exception of Clay Matthews, is an intense personality.
Very true.
We're in the locker room. I don't sense that a lot of the guys are that intense person. Even on a lesser note, guys who are outward leaders. Charles Woodson leaves, and we talked about it amongst the various television people. You know, who is the guy now on defense who steps up and becomes that vocal leader? I don't know if they had someone step up and do that last year. Now, obviously, a lot goes into the making of an interception. You have pressure up front. You have guys stepping up in the pocket. You have, you know, altering of throws, misreads on a quarterback, you know, routes run incorrectly on the part of the wide receiver. That leads to these things. But you hit it right there. If you don't have a guy on the back end who is instinctual enough to make that play, it doesn't all come together. That's really what they need. And you mentioned inside backers. I was talking about this with Larry McCarron 2 days ago. A lot of these draft pundits and whatnot have the Packers taking Ryan Shazier, which is a fun last name, in the first round. They just gave Brad Jones $11 million over 3 years. He's only played 1 year. Are you giving up on Brad Jones because of his injury history? And we can segue into where they go from that. I have my own reservations about Brad Jones' ability to stay healthy. I think it's all about his pad level. I think he plays way too high.
He's high, yeah.
And he invites hits to himself because of that. Well, but do you sell him down the river if you're Ted Thompson and you see first available?
I mean, you have to get better. You have to challenge yourself to get better and admit where you possibly made mistakes. I mean, he did have injuries last year, and he'll be around. He'll have a chance to compete, and they did give him that contract. But they'll probably look from within with Jamari Lattimore, Sam Barrington as well. They always do that at all these positions. But, right, Shazier, C.J. Mosley, they could be there in the first round. I thought you raised a good point there earlier where on this defense, who are the extroverts? Who are the outspoken, you know, loud, violent, aggressive types in that locker room who are going to speak up when they need to? I remember Tremont Williams did. I mean, there were times toward the end of last year where he did speak up and he was really trying to get guys in the secondary, watching film more. Remember that Giants game they lost, but Tremont Williams was around the ball and he was just obviously raising his level of play. you know, personality-wise, do you think that they need different personalities in there? I mean, that's a legitimate debate because, look, Ted Thompson, he made a good point where, in light of all this Richie Incognito stuff, you know, that locker room goes to hell.
Yeah.
Obviously, a locker you don't want that situation. You don't want those kinds of personalities. So he says before they draft a player in that room, they say, how does player A fit into our locker room? And they have great guys on this team. You know, it's a great locker room, good guys. I think a lot of media members would attest to that.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very good people. Do you need somebody who's going to toe that line, who's going to be a little edgy?
Well, let me answer your question with another one. You mentioned Tremont Williams raising his level of play. He collected a handful of personal fouls. Do you think he was raising his level of outwardness expression to counteract the fact that this defense really didn't have anybody who was outwardly a leader? He collected a lot of dumb personal fouls last year.
Did he, though?
Now you've been around here longer than I have. I've covered the team for a little over 2 years, so I can't speak to when he was coming up as an undrafted guy. But I think he collected a lot of chippy plays after the whistle for the sake of saying, we're not going to be pushovers.
I think that's kind of what they need. I guess I can't think of the exact plays. I know there were times when he did that, but I thought the Tremont Williams that they had there ended November into December and January. I mean, look, he probably saved his job. I mean, he's due a huge bonus, do a lot of money the final year of his contract. You can't cut him now. I mean, he's the leader on this team. I think that really on that defense, that's a player you can build around. So this year, anyways. But yeah, in general, look, first round biggest need to me, edgy playmaker, best playmaker on the board defensively. Whoever that is, whether it's Shazier, whether it's Mosley, Calvin Pryor, Clint Dix probably won't be there. There's gonna be somebody that slips to 21. So, well, let's hit on four or five of these really key questions that Ted Thompson and his scouts might be talking about or might not be talking about in their war room. He's the only insider, Dave.
That's right. Well, that's what he tells us anyway. Give those guys some extra time off with this extra time between the draft. Something else we could talk about: the over analyzing that occurs with the draft and all of these guys who seem to think they know what all the teams were thinking.
Well, there's paralysis, through analysis. What's beyond that? What's beyond, death by analysis?
I think what we're seeing with the draft being pushed back and, the NFL has this Napoleonic complex where they're the biggest thing in sports and yet they feel like they have to be talked about every second of every day of every year. You can talk yourself out of a guy just as fast as you could talk yourself into a guy.
Right.
That's dangerous thinking, I think, if I'm a scout for a team who has a lot of input into a draft strategy.
Right. If you're Ted Thompson, I think you tell your guys, look, take a week off. Get out of here. Get out of this room and breathe. go on vacation.
It's a good point.
It is a little ridiculous, and I don't think that anybody likes that the draft was pushed back 2 weeks. These prospects, you talk to prospects, you talk to agents.
Mm-hmm.
We got the sense from Ted Thompson how the Packers feel. Nobody really likes the fact that it was pushed back 2 weeks. It's the NFL making an attempt to stay in the news through, really, this is the best month in sports for other reasons.
Right.
The NHL playoffs, the NBA playoffs, the Masters, but the NFL has figured out how to stay in the news, and they've done it. I mean, the schedule release, my gosh, we know who the opponents are. Just a matter of who and when. But anyways, okay, so first question. I know this is something you want to hit on, being the center that you were back in the day.
Yeah. Banging around in Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
Those Quad A Division I linemen that just go to Penn State and never play.
We didn't have guys go to D1. We went to D3.
When you're playing Western New York, what, you're Division IV, I heard?
We were Class D.
Well, that makes a lot of
sense. We played at the Raffleson Stadium.
How did that work? You have A, B, C, D?
Correct.
Okay. So we had Quad A down to Single A. Terrell Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was a Single A star at Jeanette in the middle of Pennsylvania.
That's right, he was.
Yeah.
He spurned Penn State.
He did. Good for him.
Okay, using your center expertise.
Sure.
All right, say Green Bay does want to add a center, and right now J.C. Treader is the guy there, and he'll probably have a chance to start, and he didn't play a snap last year. He was in the iPad reading plays, playing a month and a half, a scout team, and that's it. That's all they saw of J.C. Treader, but they like him a lot. Smart guy, Cornell, former Western New Yorker. class. Sure, he was whatever. He was class C.
Whatever.
He was one class up. So you watch your mouth on your class C and class D.
Well, apparently class C is churning out pros, while class D is churning out journalists.
Exactly. I don't know where I went wrong. All right. Let's say that the Packers do want to address the center position.
Yeah.
Marcus Martin out of USC, Weston Richburg out of Colorado State. These are two players that we spent a little time watching. I know you were studying Martin today. What do you like about him, and which center would you take if that was the choice?
Well, let's be clear. These aren't first-round guys. These are
– they could be.
I mean, Travis Shredder from Wisconsin was taken by the Cowboys last year, and a lot of people were not happy about it, but he ended up being a very good player in his rookie year. These are guys who are probably going to be late second, early third. I know you have an opposing viewpoint here. Watching the tape of these guys, Richburg and Martin, I think Martin – has a higher ceiling in the sense that he is a nastier player. And that's what you need as a center, a guy who's not only going to set the line, shift, you know, the protection, do all these things. You need a guy who's going to lead from the inside out, too. A guy who is capable of getting to the second level on a combo block, something like that. A guy who can move and work with Rodgers. I think his ceiling is higher than Richburg's after watching them. We were talking before we started filming. Last year, SC played Notre Dame at Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Martin going up against Lewis Nix, who was also a guy on the Packers' radar. Pardon my French, he kicked his ass.
Yeah.
I mean, he was – Nix is not a small guy. 330-plus.
He's like
– first-round pick.
Two of us. Yeah.
Well, you don't know how much I weigh, apparently. But, you know, and he's – you're not going to blow a guy like Lewis Nix out of the hole. Mm-hmm. But there is a particular play in that game on the goal line. Lewis Nix has a low pad level. Marcus Martin takes him, gets under him, and drops him. Running back scoots right by for a touchdown. That's a signature play. Watching Weston Richburg, I didn't see the same sort of explosion off the line, the separation with the hands. One thing I'll give Richburg, he's a lighter guy. He's capable of pulling around, and they used him on traps and stuff like that. You don't see that with Martin. His lateral quickness isn't as good. He needs some work on the footwork, a little sloppy, but I don't think it's anything James Campion can't work with.
Mm-hmm.
I think his explosion, I think his ability to really offset big guys and then just road pave smaller guys sets up really well for him.
Those are some great points. I guess I really don't feel as strongly about Richburg as you probably do about Martin. I mean, I like the fact that he started 50 straight games. That he was part of an offense that averaged 470 yards a game, 507 points. They did a lot of up tempo stuff. He was the one that made the calls, and I guess I just kind of like guys that had to raise cows and pigs as a kid, and waking up at 6 a.m.
as a city guy. You know, SC playing in L.A., I see what you're saying. Some of the things I noticed, you know, Richburg, not a road paver, as Larry McCann and I like to call him. He's a hook blocker, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who gets his front foot, he hooks, he gets his body to the hole, and allows a nice clear window. That's fine, but if you're hooking guys at, you know, CSU, can you hook them in the NFL? Martin's a guy who can blow you out of the hole. Right. I think the explosion is key. And I have questions, and this may seem like a minor thing, but, you know, I hang out with Larry all the time. Snap location.
Snap location?
It's big.
Mm.
When you're in the shotgun, when you're running a hurry-up offense, Richburg a little inconsistent with a snap location. You know, and granted, the Packers don't run read option or anything like that, but if you're going to snap high, you're going to snap low. It ruins the timing of the fake. And now if you ruin the timing of the fake, you ruin the rhythm between the quarterback and the wide receiver, your slant, your slug, you know, whatever it is. Didn't see that with Martin.
Yeah.
Very consistent. I think that's a very underrated thing, and you may be saying, you know, nitpicking here. That's very underrated. Hmm. I think being able to consistently snap the ball where it needs to be is huge.
Great points. You know, if I'm Green Bay, I think they did the right thing with Evan Dietrich-Smith and you know, Dietrich Smith was really – he was a leader in that locker room, mm-hmm. somebody who would speak up in the locker room, played through pain, played through injuries on the field. You know, he had a presence about him, but Green Bay obviously wasn't willing to give him a contract extension and pay him what really wasn't a bank-breaking deal that Tampa Bay gave him. I think as a team, as a front office, you have to challenge yourself to get better. Mm. I mean, this is what they did with Darren College a few years ago. You know, Darren College, you know what he is as a guard. And they thought they had something a little better in TJ Lang. They turned out to be right. So even though this is going to be the fourth center in 4 years, I know that Thompson and the Packers have been criticized a little bit about all that, all the change there. But I think that this, taking it in a vacuum with this decision, it's the right one. Now, do they draft somebody? I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't draft the center in the first two rounds. I think that you see what you have in J.C. Tretter. You add a center later on, but you know the needs at safety, at inside mm-hmm. linebacker, tight end, to me are just a lot greater than center.
Well, thank you for devaluing the last 10 minutes of what I was saying. But what do you make of Aaron Rodgers standing up for the last 2 years and saying, this is our guy, he's going to be part of this offense for years to come, several times, and then the last day in the locker room, we talked to EDS, and he knows he's gone.
I think that Aaron Rodgers isn't the GM of the team. You know what I mean?
Enough.
Like, you know, he's a player. He's employed by the Packers. And great. You know, it's good for your quarterback, your leader, to have opinions on guys. And, you know, I'm sure Greg Jennings probably didn't like the fact that Rodgers didn't speak up on his behalf. And, mm-hmm. you know, so he has on others' behalf. So it's, yeah, I think that you, as a GM, you take that into consideration. And, yeah, continuity matters. That's important. But Evan Dietrich Smith, you watch him on film, and you know, I just think back to that San Francisco game where he got really pile-driven right back into Rodgers a couple times with a big fourth-down conversion when he should have got called for a hold. He almost tackled him. Good, solid player, but is he good enough to take you to the Super Bowl? Yeah. I think you challenge yourself if you're Green Bay, and I think that J.C. Tretter deserves the right to compete for a starting job. He's a smart, athletic, you know, former high school point guard, quarterback. He's got some potential. Have him compete with a rookie. Is it a Martin? Is it a Richburg? I don't know. I just don't know if I'd take one that high.
No, and like I said, that's maybe third round. When we look at the Packers' picks, they've got 21, 53, 85, 98 is a compensatory, 121, 161, 176, 197, 236. If you're looking around that 85 to 98 range, now you're looking in the third round, I think there's value for a center there.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously value linemen much more than you do, former quarterback. I don't know why. They protected you. But I think there's a lot of value in a pick that high. Why do you think left tackles go so high all the time?
Mm-hmm.
It's because that's you're protecting your highest paid investment. And same can be said when you watch EDS get driven back against 49ers.
We'll see.
We shall see. Yeah. What's up next?
I tell you what, that play on Lewis Nix, though, it does make you think. There aren't many people who can take a 360-pound man and shove him into the ground on the goal line.
Have you heard about his nickname? Irish Chocolate? How excellent is that?
I like it.
If I could finagle an Irish Chocolate Packers jersey, I'm all in on Lewis Nix.
Oh, man. Well, let's move on, shall we?
Sure.
All right, the next topic here. Eric Ebron, the best tight end in this draft.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a consensus. I mean, out of North Carolina, large, physical, athletic, worked a lot in the slot, blocked a little bit, but it's pretty much, you know, him and others at the tight end position, and he'll probably be gone by the time the Packers pick. So the question here now is there a non-Eric Ebron tight end worth a first-round pick? So you're looking at Austin Seferian Jenkins out of Washington, played a year of college basketball, has some athleticism. Well, you watch him on film, it's almost like a varsity player playing with a bunch of JV guys. I mean, he is just taller, bigger than everybody else. Leaves a little bit to be desired, though. He kind of lumbers. It takes him a little while to get to that third gear, then to get to that fourth gear. But he's big, and he can high point the ball, and he'll probably be there at 21. Troy Nicholas out of Notre Dame, he's somebody who did do his fair share of blocking at Notre Dame. Only started one season, but you look at the pedigree there with John Carlson, then Kyle Rudolph, then Tyler Eifert. They know what they're doing with tight ends in Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big, nasty tight end. Those are two possibilities. Jace Amoroh, basically a wide receiver playing tight end, was almost exclusively in the slot. You wonder if he was a product of what they did at Texas Tech. But as he said at the Combine, I mean, from about the first or second game on, he was double-teamed. He was bracket-covered and caught 100-plus balls. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a weapon for somebody, but just didn't do a lot of blocking. So those are three players you're kind of looking at if you're Green Bay. We're in the first round. Might be a little bit of a reach, but if you think that's a need, do you take that player? or do you wait to the second round to see if one of those three or if they like somebody else is available later on?
To answer your original question, no. I don't think any of the other tight ends are first rounders. However, this is an interesting discussion because you look at the tight ends on the Packers roster. You've got Brandon Bostic. You have Andrew Corliss. You have, other than that, Ryan Taylor.
Jake Stoneburner.
Jake Stoneburner, who spent a lot of time in the practice squad last year. And you've got Raymond Weber as well from Arkansas Pine Bluff. I don't think there is another first rounder once you get past Ebron. Severian Jenkins, it's funny, you said it takes him that third gear. When you watch him, it's not that he's taking plays off.
Mm-hmm.
He knows when he's on the backside of a play.
Mm-hmm.
You watch him, you know. Excellent stock blocker for his size. I think what's he, 6'6", 270 pounds is what he's listed as. I don't know if he's quite that big. Great stock blocker when he's playing from the wide receiver position. And I think this is interesting because there are a lot of comparables here to JerMichael Finley. When JerMichael Finley was invested in being a run blocker, he knocked guys around, and it helps the run game. Now, if you're looking for Severian Jenkins to do something similar, I don't think he's that player. If you want to split him out, he's not as athletic. He's not as fast as a guy like Jimmy Graham. Now, obviously, tough comparison because Graham's the best tight end in the NFL, in my opinion. But there are things you can do with him, obviously. I don't think it's worth paying him first-round money, or I don't think he is a first-round graded guy. He can high-point the ball, like you said. He's a matchup nightmare against linebackers going up the seam. You know, we talked so much about two-shell coverage over the last couple of years. He is a monster against that sort of defense. When you look at the full, picture for Safarian Jenkins, I don't think it's there. When he's blocking on the line, a stalemate is the best you can get. Watching him, he's not going to drive anybody. He's more of a shielder than a blocker.
Yeah.
He positions his body in whichever way the play is going.
Is he going to take on a defensive end?
In NFL defensive end? NFL if you put him against end. Justin Smith of the 49ers, Justin Smith will eat him alive if you were to put him in that position. Now, obviously, McCarthy, I'm sure, will adjust, and they make adjustments to that sort of thing. You put him as an H-back, but like Washington did, you split him out, you put him up the end and run different things, screens and whatnot, to keep people honest. But I don't think he's worth a first-round flyer. Second round?
Right.
If he's there, sure, why not?
I think it comes down to what do you want if you're the Packers at tight end? I mean, do you want a guy who's going to be able to block tight ends? Because there's not a lot of those players. I was talking to Ben Coates a few weeks ago, the complete tight end for New England on some of those great teams.
Played many Madden games with Ben Coates. Madden 64.
Wow, good reference.
Yeah.
But just a huge man who, he'd get his hands dirty and he could go downfield. He could get to the second level too. So that complete tight end just isn't around much anymore. And I think a big reason is you don't see that tight end in the college game. I mean, the way the college offenses operate, they don't need complete tight ends. So guess what? There's not going to be a lot of them in the NFL. But then you look at Green Bay's predicament. You got Seattle. You got San Francisco, like we talked about earlier. What's stopping you from beating those teams? But you could use a tight end who can block, I think. And you could also use a tight end, like you said, who can split the seam. Because when JerMichael Finley was at his best before that injury, he was splitting that seam. He was beating that cover two coverage. Brandon Bostic, we talked about this toward the end of last season, and he said, man, that was his focus, somehow figuring out to get that route down, to have the speed, to beat the linebacker right before the safety, be expecting the ball, and you're going to have to make a difficult catch knowing that you might get your head taken out.
And I think Bostic's an interesting guy because he played very well at the end of the year before his foot injury. He's still recovering.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a guy who played behind DJ Williams in camp the last 2 years. Now it's his opportunity coming into this camp to really show what he has. I think he's a good player.
Yeah. They've invested 2 years in Brandon Bostic, so they're going to give him this third year, and this is when they have to see the jump. But, do you try to find that complete tight end? If you do, Troy Nicholas, he's not perfect. His blocking is still a little shaky in spots, but he's a willing blocker for the most part. And it's his size. I mean, he's 6'6", 6'7", just a huge workout warrior. They call him Hercules in the weight room. I mean, you pull up the video of his pep rally before a Michigan game, he's kind of nuts. I mean, he rips off his shirt and he's screaming and yelling.
Mm-hmm.
He's about the closest you're going to get to a complete tight end. probably will be there in the second round. I mean, there's a decent chance he'll be there. I don't think you need to take a chance. I agree with you. I don't think you need to gamble and take a tight end in the first round. I think you see what trickles to you. You know, maybe even wait to the third or fourth round. C.J. Fedorowicz out of Iowa. You know, he's a high school wide receiver who really did develop as a blocker under Kirk Ferentz, something he embraced. Wasn't asked to go downfield a lot in college. You look at his numbers, they're not that great. What do you have, 299 receiving yards last year? But at the Senior Bowl, when I was down there in Mobile, he did get downfield. He made some plays, so maybe he's a mid-round guy if they wait.
It's an Iowa tight end right there. Corn Fred.
Corn Fed.
My time in Nebraska, I can tell you.
Yeah, that's right. It's your
big
old
Kirk
neck of the woods.
Ferentz fans in Iowa love Kirk Ferentz.
Oh, and look, there's a pipeline with Green Bay. I mean, Micah Hyde, Mike Daniels, Brian Bulaga. Before that, Aaron Campman. For whatever reason, Ted Thompson goes to that program. So you're looking at Fedorowicz as a possibility. All right, let's move on. Our third question here on the Packers podcast. NFL Draft Preview.
Sure.
With Dan Coop filling in from NBC 26. Featuring.
At Dan Coop.
At Dan Coop. I didn't plug your Twitter there.
Well, it's okay. No one knows about it. So.
Okay. Well,
yeah. Well, when you've got 19,000 less followers than Tyler Dunn, you know, it's easy to just look past it.
Because that's that, you know, we really should be judged on the amount of Twitter followers we have in life.
See,
right?
I've always
we
thought
really
that
should.
Too. I've always thought that. That's why Justin Bieber is probably the most powerful person.
You know, we should elect him to office, Bieber.
Well, Rob Ford, out of office now, taking care of some personal issues up there in Toronto. I think it's time to bring the Biebs in.
Bring the Biebs in.
That's right.
We can trade him. What's a fair trade?
51.3 million followers for the Biebs.
51.3 million people who probably should just, you know, go to a library and read a book.
Or listen to Phil Collins. Some real music. Real music. To be fair, I own a Biebs CD.
You own it. Just I knew you liked Kesha.
Well, I shouldn't say.
I'll draw the line at Kesha.
I shouldn't say I own it. It was burned for me. His last album.
His last album burned for me.
Now let me finish. His last album came out on June 19th, 2012. My birthday.
How do you know?
I'm
this?
Telling you, my birthday is June 19th.
Okay.
A coworker, as a joke, I think, burned me a copy and put it on my desk. For me to listen to on my birthday. So I own a Biebs CD. I don't remember what it's called. I think it's Believe. I think that's what it's called. But it's got Nicki Minaj, Beauty and a Beat. It's got Drake, Right Here, All Around the World with Ludacris, As Long As You Love Me, which is a great song, with Big Sean. You're getting a lot of Biebs education right now. I'm dropping some Bieber knowledge.
You know, I will say this. Savage Garden came on the radio yesterday, and I did not change the channel.
Savage Garden. Was it on your Now That's What I Call Music?
No,
too?
It was on 90s on 9, Sirius XM. I Want You, a great song. Timeless classic. Okay, enough of this. Let's move on. All right, third question, Dan.
Yes.
All right, so Green Bay, they re-signed Matt Flynn.
Will Kesha come to Green Bay? I'm just kidding. No.
Let's hope not. Here we go. They re-signed Matt Flynn.
Uh-huh.
They're developing Scott Tolzien.
Yeah.
They obviously know after last season you can't have too many quarterbacks. Mike McCarthy would like to develop, work with a fourth quarterback in training camp. How much of a need is quarterback right now for Green Bay?
I think I don't have as much confidence in Scott Tolzien as other people do. Obviously, they're trying to develop him. I think Mike McCarthy feels like he needs to develop another quarterback. Pretty big failure with B.J. Coleman and Graham Harrell. They gave them, specifically with Harrell, gave him a couple years in his quarterback school. Mm-hmm. Didn't work out. I think McCarthy will draft a quarterback, and I think he thinks he needs to develop another player.
Right.
I think they draft a fourth quarterback. Now, as far as the backup, Matt Flynn should be the backup because I think he's more capable of running the offense smoothly than Tolzien. Tolzien, bigger arm. Probably not as accurate, but can he run McCarthy's offense as well as Flynn? I think no.
Well, we're going to find out. He's going to get a training camp.
Yeah.
He's going to get a preseason. Like you said, better arm. I mean, completed all those deep play-action passes against New York. But Flynn was the one that got you the wins, and
yeah.
He can run the hurry-up. He can make more adjustments at the line. Remember the offensive linemen, and in so many words last year, were just trying to be nice. Look, With a backup quarterback,
yeah,
you're just not going to make those run adjustments that Aaron Rodgers was making with the run game.
Yeah.
Flynn can do some things at the line, but look, this reminds me so much of, you know, last season, 2 years ago, all the injuries at running back. Mm. You know, they end up signing Cedric Benson in August. They pick up Ryan Grant by December, yeah, who they didn't even want, yeah, in the offseason. They pick up the used car salesman. They're going through 5-6 guys at running back. So what did they do that next NFL draft? They take two running backs in the first four rounds. Unheard of. You don't do that in 2014. You know, people treat running back, I think, like I wrote sometime, like a walkthrough Kmart. It's just,
yeah.
But that was what cost them in many ways the season before. They didn't have a running game. What did kind of cost them this year? They didn't have depth at quarterback. So even though they're bringing Flynn Tolzien back, would not be a surprise if they went with a quarterback in, I don't know, the fourth round.
Seven quarterbacks went in and out of the locker room last year. That's unbelievable. For a team that made the playoffs. Seven quarterbacks.
Playoffs.
Do we need to walk through them? Graham Harrell, Scott Tolzien, Vince Young, Matt Flynn, Aaron Rodgers, B.J. Coleman.
Seneca Wallace.
Seven guys.
Right.
And they made the playoffs. That's unbelievable.
It really is.
I don't know if it means the Packers are resilient or the NFC North is a joke.
You know, it isn't. Say, Mike McCarthy, you know, he's done wonders with quarterbacks way back to the early 90s. I mean, when he's a grad assistant working with, you know, Pitt, and he's working with Joe Montana in Kansas City. But they just stuck with Graham Harrell a little too long, and they maxed out the talent that they had there, and it cost them. So, all right, so who are some names? Let's talk about some possibilities for Green Bay in this year's draft. You're looking at possibly a Tom Savage. Tom Silverstein, colleague, reported that he visited with Green Bay from Pitt. Here's a guy who went to Rutgers, transferred, was out of football for a couple of years, and showed some things at Pitt last year. David Fales out of San Jose State. Played an up-tempo offense, can run the hurry up. Not a big quarterback, but he'll keep things moving on the line. Those are a couple names. If you wait, a developmental quarterback that I talked to, Bryn Renner out of North Carolina, grew up idolizing Brett Favre. He says he's all about Favre. I don't know. He could be a sixth or seventh rounder if you wait there. But there are some options. I don't think that Green Bay just, you know, takes an A.J. McCarron in the second round, something like that. But
no, I agree.
You have to add somebody, even in – you know, this collective bargaining agreement that cuts back on practices almost at every turn. There's only a handful of reps for backup quarterbacks to get. It's a mistake that they just can't afford. They have to add another player.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. And let's talk about this guy. We both did stories on him, different stories on him.
Yeah.
At NBC 26 this week, you were down there with the Aberderis family. So first of all, I guess, is this the year that Green Bay maybe drafts a Wisconsin Badger? What do you see in Aberderis?
I think if he falls far enough, you may see him come off. Third-round projection, if he falls to that fourth round, there's always movement in those middle rounds. You never really know. I think Aberderis can be a very productive NFL player if he falls to the right system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's in Green Bay.
Why is that?
I think he's a slot kind of guy, excellent route runner, crafty sort of football player. And I think the slot is obviously spoken for in Green Bay. I mean, you look at Randall Cobb. If he goes and is a sort of a Julian Edelman type, I won't say Wes Welker, because I think Wes Welker is better. If he goes to a system where they utilize the slot in a similar fashion to New England or Denver now, or maybe even Indianapolis with Andrew Luck, I think he can be successful. But I think it will be purely based on fit.
Mm-hmm. It could be. I mean, he's not a 6'3", 6'4", towering receiver.
And he's a skinny guy.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of muscle definition on him. Now, high motor, high energy. He was working out with two of his buddies. One played basketball at Ripon and Oshkosh. He transferred. The other one was the other guy's brother and older. And he was running circles around them. It was funny to watch because they were all sitting there like, we're not training to be in the NFL. I don't know why you're making us do three supersets in between, you know, high-intensity abs. But he's got a high motor. He's going to work as hard as possible. He's going to make a niche for himself in the NFL. I just don't think it's with the Packers.
You know, talking to his wide receiver coach at Wisconsin, in his discussions with NFL teams, he said that they're telling him that Aberderis runs some of the best routes in this draft. I mean, this is one of the best drafts for the wide receiver position, maybe the best since 1996 when all those greats came out. So I think that says a lot. you look at the tape. I mean, that game against Ohio State where he just used and abused Bradley Roby. I mean, he quote-unquote double-moved him to death, as his coach Chris Beatty said. So there's a lot to like with Aberderis. I don't know, though. I mean, I don't know if he fits into what Green Bay wants to do. I mean, this if Ted Thompson's going to take the best available player, like he says, then you'd have to think he'd take a wide receiver at some point because it's such a deep, talented draft for the wide receiver position. Do you maybe go for a Kevin Norwood out of Alabama, somebody who can run the option route, who's familiar with what he would have to do in Green Bay where, you know, you run 6-7 yards at the top of your route, you make a decision, and it better be the right decision as Aaron Rodgers. I think if you're adding a receiver, it's got to be somebody mentally who can handle all of that. But look, it's not a pressing need for this team. I mean, even after losing James Jones, you know, Jared Boykin is ready to step in. I mean, in essentially 11 starts last year, but he had 600, 700 yards, proved at his 40 time at the combine. It's not indicative of all of his game. Great route runner, has the quarterback's trust. I think they just need to stay healthy. Between Boykin, Cobb, Jordy Nelson, maybe they develop Miles White, maybe they take a guy in the middle rounds.
And we talked about this the other day, the perception of the 40-yard dash. I know, I think you're working on a piece about that. This perception, the end-all, be-all of the 40-yard dash, I think is very misleading.
Mm-hmm.
Combine numbers are so scrutinized. How does a guy play? You know, who is the 40 really important for? Your back end guys, I think it's important for. Your safeties to erase mistakes made in coverage. Your cornerbacks for recovery speed and whatnot. Your wide receivers to an extent. Your bigger guys who are possession guys, who are crafty, who run routes well, who do things like that. I don't know how important the 40 is for them. You know, if they're running a 5-1, you probably don't want to go with them. But, I mean, if you're anywhere from 4-4 to 4-6, honestly, if one guy's running a 4-5, one guy's running a 4-4-5, and the guy who runs a 4-5 is a much better polished receiver, what's the discussion?
You know, and talking to receivers about that, they're a little torn, too, because, look, if you can run a 4-3 and you can take the quote-unquote top off the defense, you're automatically terrifying that cornerback because they're living in fear that you're going to go deep. So guess what? That opens up everything underneath. You can stop on a dime after 10 yards. You can run those comebacks. It's kind of like, you know, Kevin Durant. Once he hits 4-3s, he can pump fake it and go to the rim. Yeah. So I think that speed absolutely matters at that position. It really is a position-by-position deal, and I don't want to give too much away, but talk to a bunch of draft prospects about this. And it really just depends on the position. Like you said, the safety position. If you're Terrence Brooks, if you're Jimmy Ward, if you're a safety that has to close on the run fast, that has to erase mistakes on the deep end, guess what? The difference between running a 4-7 and a 4-3 or 4-4 is huge. If you're an offensive guard, not really.
I think a lot of it's piecing the pieces of your team together, obviously. If you've got a collection of 4-6 receivers, you don't want that, obviously. If you've got one guy you take the top off, that's preferable. I just think, as a whole, guys who run fast are going to say it's more important than guys who are in the middle of the pack.
Well, there's full 40 speed, and there's game speed, there's football speed, and it just varies. There's a reaction element to it all. Well, let's get on to probably the number one draft topic.
Yeah, we've buried the lead long enough.
Buried the lead.
44 minutes in, and here we are.
We've been rambling about Kesha and Phil Collins.
Deservedly so.
You gotta talk Kesha.
I still can't believe you're anti-Phil. I think it's absurd.
You know, my dad had me going on ZZ Top and ACDC. He didn't have me going on Phil
I have
Collins.
A lot of respect to your father, so I'm not going to say anything.
That's right. You did meet Steve Dunn, didn't you?
Just an infectious laugh, folks, for those who have never met him.
Great man. Loyal listener of the Packers podcast,
excellent.
He'll appreciate the shout-out.
I'm glad.
The safety position.
Yeah, let's get
is this the number one need on the Packers? I say yes. Say yes.
I think it's not even close.
Right. So who do we like here? Let's go down the list.
Well, and let me ask you, because I know we've got a lot of questions on the Twitter about this. We know the main guys are obviously Calvin Pryor. You've got Dix from Alabama. Jimmy Ward on the fringe from Northern Illinois. I don't think Clinton Dix is going to be there.
No.
So I don't know how much it's worth our time to discuss him. Can you see the Packers in a position where there's information about a team wanting to take Pryor, who's close to the Packers at 21, moving up to get him, full knowing that this is a guy who can be a difference maker.
I don't know about that. I think that you look at the Chicago Bears, they're a few picks before Green Bay, and anybody who saw Randall Cobb score that game-winning touchdown knows that the Bears need a safety, and anybody who saw that they signed MD Jennings probably knows they need a safety. So I think that could be a landing spot for Calvin Pryor. Now, if he's there, does he fit your defense? And in our mock draft on JS Online, that was the pick I had for Green Bay. And basically my rationale was they need violence. They need aggression. This is a guy who knocked out three players in three straight games. Said himself, he'll take a chance. He'll take a risk. He'll gamble. And that's something that Green Bay's coaches don't necessarily like.
Yeah.
But I think if you're in that NFC, with the teams that stand in the way, you need to take a chance. And that with Morgan Burnett, more of a steady presence, whether one's at free, one's at strong, that they could blend together. Now, I was talking to Corey Chavis, the former NFL DB who does great work. NFL Draft Nasty is his publication that's out. And we were talking about the safety position. He goes, I don't think Calvin Pryor is a fit for what Green Bay does defensively and who they have in the division. He pointed to Alshon Jeffrey, Calvin Johnson, Brandon Marshall, big, strong receivers. What do we hear every week before they play Chicago? That they hate how physical Chicago's receivers are. I know it's a safety position we're talking about here. He thought that maybe they'd go with a taller, bigger safety in the middle round. So, I don't know. I think if Pryor's there and you're Green Bay, you take him. You need a defensive playmaker, a game changer.
Yeah, I don't know if taking a guy in the middle of the round that's just taller and possibly more physical, it sounds more like a Band-Aid. You're preparing for two games. Maybe, if you throw the Lions in there, four games out of the year where you want a taller guy. Pryor plays unbelievably fast. Quick pace, violent player, like you said. I think he would bring a lot of physicality. I think if he's there, he's the pick. I don't know if he will be there, which brings up another interesting point. Jimmy Ward, do you take him at 21? But he's even more undersized.
It's probably a reach, I think.
Yeah.
He did a lot in Northern Illinois. They had him in the slot. They had him in cover two, deep center. They brought him down into the box. And he was around the ball a lot, seven interceptions.
Yeah.
He looked great during the Senior Bowl week in Mobile, which is actually his hometown, kind of ironic, but was the best defensive back down there during practices. But he's not a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
He played the MAC competition. I don't like to hold that against a guy, but it wasn't what Terrence Brooks saw at Florida State or Calvin Pryor saw at Louisville.
Don't short sell the MACtion. MACtion's where it's at. My Temple Owls used to play in the MACtion.
Yeah, well, if you're associated with Temple football, look out.
I might not know what I'm talking about then.
I just mean that in general, the program. Do you like Jimmy Ward? Do you think he's a fit?
I like him. I don't know if he's a fit because of how small he is. I think Ted Thompson has said he likes bigger safeties.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're drafting a guy just to fill a need and you hope that he's able to keep up, I don't know if that's a smart decision. What I think they do in the first round is I think both safeties are gone. I think the decision then becomes, is Safarian Jenkins at tight end worth the first round pick? And I think the answer is no. So if I'm Ted Thompson, those safeties are gone. I think it's too high to take Jimmy Ward. I'm trading down. I think they're going to trade down.
Or you're looking at C.J. Mosley and or
Ryan
Shazier.
That's a good point, too. Yeah, we haven't really talked about those guys.
Shazier, a guy who is athletic,
uh-huh.
Knows how to shoot gaps, probably works best on the weak side in a 4-3, but he could be a possibility of inside linebacker. Now,
but we talked about this before I did the podcast. You just signed Brad Jones to a 3-year deal for $11 million. He played one year. He was hurt. Are you willing to draft a guy in the first round with the expectation that he's going to play next to A.J. Hawk?
Sure, I think so. And I think that you give Jamari Lattimore a chance to start as well. I think Lattimore, when he came in and with the Baltimore game and Detroit, played
great. Well.
He was a difference maker. When he came in the Chicago de facto NFC North title game, not so much. But we'll see if he gets a fair shot. Back to the safeties. Let's say that scenario plays out where Clinton Dix and Pryor are not there. And you don't want to reach on a safety there. One name to keep in mind, Terrence Brooks, Florida State. This is a player who closes fast, 8 tackles for loss last year. Dropped some interceptions, so the interception numbers aren't there. But plays fast, He had the best 40 time at the combine at 4.42, the best vertical leap at 38 inches, I believe,
mm-hmm.
and that translates to the field. You watch him over the course of a game, it translates, and he played in an NFL-ready defense. If you wait at safety, second round, Terrence Brooks could be a real possibility.
Okay.
All right, let's take some questions on Twitter. The Twitter sphere is ready to rock. We might have addressed some of these, so we apologize if we don't get to you. Okay, this one comes from at TFA41. He asks, is Clinton Dix worth trading up for, and at what pick does it become worth it?
I don't know if there are, you know, so much of trading up into the first round is finding a team willing to trade back.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Packers have a lot of picks that they could package. I don't know if they're high enough to move up. And I don't know, just knowing the way that this team operates as far as acquiring assets and picks, you know, I'm looking, do they go top 10 to grab Clinton Dix? I don't think so. So you're looking from 11 and down, you know, Tennessee, New York, St. Louis, who is going for their second pick in the first round. Chicago, who we talked about, who will possibly be lining up one as well, a safety that is. Pittsburgh, Dallas, Baltimore. Maybe you look at Dallas, but, you know, if Dallas trades up to grab Johnny Manziel, which everyone's talking about, does the team who then traded back want to move back again? I don't think so. I think the teams, and you've got the Ravens, who need a safety too at 17. I don't know if there's a partner there.
I don't either. I think that the past couple of years we saw the safeties go a little higher than everybody expected. Mark Barron, Kenny Vaccaro, they both went a little higher than everybody was mocking, everybody thought. So mm-hmm. I think that Clinton Dix probably doesn't fall too far down this draft. He's the most pro-ready safety coming out of that Alabama defense. If he does start slipping, look, if we're talking trades at 21, if anything, Ted Thompson might be fielding calls for a team looking to get back in there to draft a quarterback, a Derek Carr, a Teddy Bridgewater. I don't think Manziel will slip to that point. There could be a quarterback needy team willing to unload a few picks for that spot.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a possibility. Thought they might do that last year, and then we realized, well, nobody even liked any of those quarterbacks other than the Bills and E.J. Manuel. So we'll see.
As Bob McGinn says, your Bills. Western
Hi, Bills.
New York.
All right, let's get to another one here. This one comes from at AV_1. He asks, what's more likely for the Packers, trade back in the first or trade up in the second?
I'm going to say both. I know it's sort of a cop-out. I think they trade back, and then wherever they are, they make another trade to move back up because they like somebody. And we saw it last year.
At @MattJ_onNFL, and we just kind of talked about this, but he's right to the point. What are your thoughts on Jimmy Ward being a better fit for Green Bay than Pryor? I don't think he is. I mean, the Green Bay likes the players that can play a little corner and can play a little safety, those hybrid types. Jimmy Ward is that. I just think that Calvin Pryor is a difference maker who can kind of rise above that, and you find ways to utilize that talent as opposed to fitting that talent into what you want to do.
You know what I think is interesting? Is there's so much talk about, well, how are the Packers going to fit everything together? How is a drafted safety going to fit in? How are they going to use Julius Peppers? When all offseason, all we've heard from McCarthy is, we are dumbing down the scheme of the defense. I think it's interesting that everyone wants to know how we're going to use everything when they're looking to simplify the defense. So when you're looking at a safety, does that then mean, well, you need a guy who can step in and do, you know, X, Y, and Z, or a guy who, you know, you can plug in and it's going to be solid game in and game out?
I guess it's how you interpreted Mike McCarthy's comments. I mean, when he talked about this over the offseason, my thought was he wants players who can handle multiple responsibilities so they can get complex, so they can do different things. And you do different things with Micah Hyde as a slot corner or a safety. You do different things with Dayton Jones, Mike Neal, Nick Perry up front. That's kind of how I interpreted it, but remains to be seen.
Yeah. You know, we haven't really talked about, I know we're going away from the Twitter questions. We really haven't talked about the inside backers. Briefly, we mentioned Shazier and C.J. Mosley. What are your impressions, and who do you think could slide in? Mosley projected to go a little sooner, but Shazier, a guy who a lot of people think the Packers will take.
Boy, you know, caught up with Luke Fickell, the Ohio State assistant coach this morning, and he said that, you know, he believes that Shazier is a guy who could help Green Bay.
Was he on the fence? That's a Fickell joke. Never mind. Terrible.
Above my head.
No, it's just terrible. Yeah.
He sees that Shazier is that speedy, athletic linebacker who could help Green Bay against the Colin Kaepernick, against the Russell Wilson. Now, he's a little taller, a little leaner than C.J. Mosley.
Yeah.
Mosley's probably a little more instinctual. Mm-hmm. He makes his decisions a little quicker and is a little thicker, and I have to think that Green Bay likes the fact that he comes from Alabama after seeing what Eddie Lacy did out of Alabama, mm-hmm. The program that Nick Saban has there and what they do that's different. I don't know. I guess I'm not really sold on Shazier like a lot of people are. I think that he was a playmaker at Ohio State, but is he that much different mm-hmm. than Brad Jones, than Jamari Lattimore, than Sam Barrington, what they have? I don't know. I think the difference between a safety they could get in the first round, a tight end they could get in the second round might be a little different than what they could get in.
I think you're right on there. Shazier, a little bigger, plays a little higher, tends to stick to blocks more.
Mm-hmm.
Accepts the block as opposed to taking it on. Watched a bunch of clips of how they attack the hole when an offense is going to run ISO at them. And when I say that, I mean you got your combo blocks up top, your fullback's responsible for blasting him through the hole with your running back behind him. Shazier, really a mixed bag. Accepts a lot of blocks when Mosley is a guy who really fills the hole.
Mm-hmm.
Not as quick as Shazier, frankly, but much more instinctual. Fills the hole, takes on a fullback, gives ground grudgingly, but is able to absorb and make a play. I don't think Shazier is the same type of guy. I think he's better in coverage from a speed standpoint. But I think if you're looking at it and saying, we've had middle linebackers who haven't been able to stay healthy, durable, plug holes, I think Mosley, more likely the better guy. So at 21, it's that decision. Do we spend a draft pick on Shazier, who we just signed Brad Jones, and Jamari Lattimore?
Agreed. I mean, beyond those two, I think you're looking at a lot of highly productive college players
mm-hmm.
that athletically or physically aren't necessarily gifted.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Chris Borland's an interesting guy to talk about then as well. I know Bob wrote recently about his shoulder, which is now concerning a lot of GMs. I think he, productive guy in college, I think he's a football player. I think later on, if he's there, I think he's worth the pick.
Boy, and it's obviously he has the height concerns. His arms are very, very short.
He's got little T-Rex arms.
He's got the T-Rex arms going on, small hands. But, boy, a lot of people, you keep hearing that Zach Thomas comparison. There are some exceptions to the rule. Green Bay, they moved away from that smaller linebacker a couple years ago. That the release of DJ Smith coming off that injury caught some people by surprise. They indicated that they like height at the position. Does Borland cut against that mold? Is he the exception? Well, Green Bay has seen him more than any other team.
Mm-hmm.
We know Ted Thompson at least checks out these Badgers.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the injury is a concern. And for a team that's quote-unquote declaring war on injuries, as my colleague wrote last year, they got to declare war on injuries again. And I don't know if you want to draft a player who has some red flags.
All right.
All right, Dan, should we call it a show?
Are we cutting the cord? Is that? Do we have any more questions?
I think we're good.
Okay.
I think we're good.
Well, hey, thanks for letting me hop on here.
Thanks for coming. Put her there.
Hey, you're the one who came.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, and thank you to all the listeners checking this out. And Bob will be back, but hey, now we know if we need a fill-in, we're giving
him. Shine the bat signal up there. I'll
Herrera is what you use the Herrera.
Herrera.
Okay.
Not a Brewers guy.
Maybe Overbay or Reynolds?
Big O?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm more comfortable discussing the Phillies, but that's fine. We can go with some Brew Crew guys.
Thanks for listening, everybody.